Why are good people suddenly enemies of the state?
I'm sorry, friends. I just can't go along with this idea that there's actually no attempt going on at the moment to destroy the U.S. economy. What else is this? To destroy the U.S. economy and to set up a global economy, and dare I say, if they get their way, to set up an entire new world order. That's what they want. A borderless world.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jen Markell. Brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries, radio for the remnant. We have a vitally important election coming up in just over a week. Freedom is at stake. Jan talks to two who address issues related to global government this hour. Our first guest is the familiar voice of Gary Kaw. If just 5% of Christians do not vote on November 3rd, our way of life could drastically change, and the rush to the one world system will be on overdrive. Here is today's programming.
In order for these schemers to convince the people of the world of their need for a world government, there has to be an atmosphere of crisis in every major area of our lives. The environment is one of those. If people are convinced that the world's going to literally destroy itself, then people will be more likely to receive the solution, which will be world government that can protect us.
So glad you could join me for the hour. For the first part of the program, I'm going to continue some discussion on the forthcoming U.S. election. It is the most important election, I think, in several generations, and the result will determine a future for America and the world. I think it's either freedom or tyranny, to be honest. And as you know, I monitor the rush to the global system. President Trump has stalled global government for these almost 4 years. And the rush to the New World Order, well, it's on. For it to be fully implemented, the church has to disappear, and what's known as the rapture, that is not the topic of this hour, however. There can be no one world system with the church still present, because this will be in the tribulation. My guest for this segment is going to be the familiar voice of Gary Kaw. He's monitored the rush to the one world system for over 30 years. He's a frequent guest. He was my radio guest last spring when we discussed, among other things, how COVID was speeding the onset of globalism. We talked about Pope Francis, and we're going to probably get into that for a little bit here today as well. Gary, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Jan. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Gary, such an important election, and you say this, never in our lifetime has there been such a stark contrast between the two major parties. It's not an overstatement to say that our existence as a free nation is at stake. We've got two very interesting candidates and vice presidential candidates. You sensed, and this would have been going all the way back to 2018, that Kamala Harris would actually become a president or vice president candidate. What were the indicators?
Yeah, I wrote back in our fall of 2018 issue, I said, keep your eyes on California Senator Kamala Harris. She's a rising star within the Democratic Party and is rapidly gaining popularity among millennials. She is attractive, intelligent, well-spoken, and extremely liberal. Some political insiders believe she has her eyes on the White House. But in order to become her party's nominee, she would have to first overcome some of the older establishment liberals, such as Joe Biden. That's what I wrote 2 years ago, and I might as well comment on, well, she's almost there. If Biden and Harris win, she's only going to be one mini-stroke away from being our commander-in-chief.
I want to quote you here, because you write, the real champion is Kamala Harris, hardcore liberal socialist who is entirely dedicated to the climate change pro-UN one-world agenda. And you say, if the progressives win, Harris and her behind-the-scenes accomplices, not Mr. Biden, will be in charge. Things in the U.S. would drastically change. There would be no turning back. This time, as the number of ultra-liberals in the U.S. is growing, thanks to the combined efforts of the leftist university professors, the social and conventional media, Hollywood, high-tech moguls, and millennial followers of Black Lives Matter, AOC, the majority of whom are dedicated socialists. Expand on that for just a minute. Your thoughts behind that paragraph you wrote.
You've got many groups now working together, networking tightly, and their joint goal is to bring in socialism.
Yes.
A lot of people don't make this connection, what I'm getting ready to share, but it's important that we do. Back in the 80s and 90s, we talked about the One World New Age movement. That was growing. There was thousands of New Age organizations out there, and interfaithism was beginning to become popular. What people need to understand is that all of that has morphed into this one world socialist movement. Let me give you an example. The Socialist International is an umbrella organization of hundreds of socialist organizations from around the world. It's kind of the mothership, if you will. The current Secretary General of the United Nations, Guterres, was the president of the Socialist International for years, and he was rewarded by being made UN Secretary General. That's how influential that organization is. They have their tentacles out all over the United States and other parts of the world. Their prize, if they can rein us in, would be the United States, and they've been working hard at this for many, many years, decades. In fact, Dan Bongino from Fox News, he posted, I think it was on October 3rd, a 9-minute excerpt of Ronald Reagan's speech from 1964 where he warned the U.S. about the coming socialism. It is powerful. He was spot on that many years ago. So Reagan was already aware of it back in those days, but people would roll their eyes. They weren't that concerned about it. Of course, it's come so much further today because of Trump's personality. He's drawn all of this to the surface. These people hate him so much, they can't help themselves but to come out and speak what they really think. At least to that degree, we as Christians have been given a heads up now.
Yes,
we realize
yes.
what we're dealing with, whereas I believe a few years ago, many of us didn't realize just how far along things were. Now there's no excuse. You've got close to 40% of the country, according to some polls, that lean socialist.
How long, in your opinion, do you think it would take a Biden-Harris administration to begin to move blatantly to global government? I would say weeks to months. What say you?
I would say within the first 3 months, they'll jump on it if they can control both the House and the Senate. That's key for either party, because as we've seen, if you don't have both, it's almost impossible to get anything done. Also, depending what happens in the Supreme Court, if conservatives gain a genuine majority, that could come in handy for us down the road. But for the most part, of course, the legislative decisions and anything involving our move toward global government would be made between the House and the Senate, and then the president would have to approve that. Seeing where the House is and where some of our senators stand, including Chuck Schumer, I think they're chomping at the bit. They're just hoping they can get on with it. Trump and Pence have been standing in their way. Now with the whole Supreme Court situation, it's a nightmare for them. It's unfolding, and they realize what all is at stake for them, because if we take the Supreme Court and the House and the Senate, it would be very difficult for them to move forward over the next few years. I think it would give us a reprieve at least for a while longer.
Okay.
A lot at stake in this election, and I'll just use this as an opportunity. I'm telling people to get out and vote no matter what obstacles you may face. Unless you're dying, get out and vote. Because it's not just the national election, but also the state and local elections where there is so much at stake, especially involving our congressional seats.
Both you and I feel that Kamala Harris would quickly be actually running the show. Mr. Biden would have to step aside for reasons that may be pretty obvious to some of us anyway. And that some of the, if I dare say, nonsense is going to come along quickly. Green New Deal, which my understanding could be $100 trillion. That's what I've heard anyway. And that's a staggering amount of money. But that's just one policy. There's going to be lots of other policies that are going to come along, which will sink America. When America sinks, then the whole world sinks. And that's just begging for global government to be the solution to perhaps a Washington gone haywire.
You're exactly right. And I think if Harris gets in, she'll be running the show, and those behind her would be running the show through her. I don't see how Biden can endure the pressures of the White House for 4 years. I think most people, whether Democrat or Republican, would probably agree on that. If Biden-Harris get in, I think she would have a major voice right from the get-go, and she's far more liberal than people think. She's smart. She knows how far to go usually when the cameras are on, and when they're off, then she speaks her real mind, unlike AOC, who pretty much says what she thinks most of the time. And that's one reason they've kind of had to put a silencer on her a little bit, because she voices where they're really coming from.
I'm going to quote you again from your Fall 2020 magazine, which you can subscribe to at GaryKah.org, spelled K-A-H, GaryKah.org, comes out 4 times a year. It's a many-page magazine. And you say during these final weeks before the election, the liberal powers that be will use every weapon in their arsenal to diminish the credibility and presidential stature of Donald Trump. As such, they will continue to do everything possible to ruin our economy via COVID restrictions, destructive riots, and any other ploy at their disposal, hoping to effectively pin the blame for a crash, should it occur, on the president. And then you say, Democrats are becoming more desperate by the day as they are now facing the additional possibility of losing the Supreme Court. I think that's definitely going to happen here. The death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg could not have come at a worse time for them. They would have kept her on life support until after the election, could they have done so. For the progressive, their worst nightmare is coming true. So, indeed, that has thrown a tremendous monkey wrench into things. And President Trump has put a pause on the climate change activity, on the Paris Climate Accords, on the celebration of the World Health Organization, on the celebration of the United Nations. So there are victories that are at risk here for conservatives.
That's right. And I remember years ago, a friend of mine, Dr. Michael Kaufman, he was one of the top experts on climate change and the environment in the country and had testified before Congress. I remember him telling me, he said, Gary, if humans did everything perfectly regarding the environment, we could only impact maybe 2 to 3% of what happens. 5% would be a huge stretch. So in other words, if the oceans were going to go up by 20 feet over the next 20 years, which it won't happen, but let's say it would under normal circumstances, he said, even if we did everything humanly possible, they'd still go up by 19 feet. And that's the part the media isn't sharing. They're trying to convince us that climate change is all because of human activity. And now they've gone even a step further. If you listen to the media, you think that Donald Trump alone is causing all of it. He's causing all the fires in California and all the hurricanes. It's all something Donald Trump has managed to accomplish in the last 3 to 4 years. And they believe that the sky is falling and that they need to come together through an empowered United Nations global government to solve the environmental crisis. And they're using the COVID situation for the same reason. We have to come together through the World Health Organization that can dictate everything we need to do planet-wise to conquer this pandemic. And of course, the U.S. hasn't played that game. Donald Trump did the opposite. He pulled us out of the World Health Organization, defunding the World Health Organization. The globalists are fit to be tied. They're very upset with this administration and with the U.S. as a whole for putting Trump into office. A showdown is coming, make no mistake. And for right now, that showdown is between Trump, Pence versus Biden, Harris. If the Democrats lose this election and Trump gets back in, there will be fireworks of some type. But if Biden and Harris win, then that begs the question, what is the right going to do? Knowing that they have a socialist agenda, other than praying, is there going to be more activity? Are people going to become more oriented toward protests, like what the left has done, hopefully nonviolent? We're at that point where, for all practical purposes, we're already in a war of sorts. So far, you haven't had shots fired on a broad scale, but it wouldn't take much at this point. No matter who wins this election, I believe this controversy is just going to keep escalating. Short of God's divine intervention, I think we're going to have some rocky months ahead.
You're listening to Understanding the Times Radio. Jan Markell here. I have on the line from Indiana Gary Kaa. He's been my radio guest, I'm sure, 20 times in the last 15 years or so, maybe more. We always talk about the rush to one worldism. He was with me in the spring when COVID was manifesting. We both acknowledged at that time that obviously the globalists need a crisis. They tried to tag on to global warming, climate change, not too effective. And then came the international crisis of COVID, almost 200 nations affected by the virus. And that certainly was the crisis. The one worlders decided, well, this is it. Bill Gates flew into action and some others. Kind of the rest is history. I don't think we know exactly where it's going. It's heading towards a one-world system. We don't know the timing on that. Also last spring, you and I talked about the role of the Vatican, and that's always an intriguing topic. And my listeners, I don't know how many are Catholic, it doesn't really matter, but they always have an interest in Pope Francis. I'm playing a 10-year-old clip of you here, and you're referring to Pope Benedict because, again, even Pope Benedict was a globalist. Now that has been accentuated and accelerated 100 times over with Pope Francis, who just recently came out. He blatantly denounced capitalism, praised not just socialism, but communism. But here is Gary from 10 years ago talking about the role of the Vatican in this global effort.
On July 6th, Pope Benedict issued his Charity and Truth Statement, also known as an encyclical. In this particular encyclical is a rather radical document that puts the Roman Catholic Church firmly on the side of an emerging world government, according to Cliff Kincaid of Accuracy in Media. Now, I'd like to quote to you from the Pope's encyclical. These are his words, not mine. In the face of the unrelenting growth of global interdependence, there's a strongly felt need, even in the midst of a global recession, for a reform of the United Nations organization and likewise of economic institutions and international finance so that the concept of the family of nations can acquire real teeth. This seems necessary in order to arrive at a political, juridical, and economic order which can increase and give direction to international cooperation for the development of all peoples in solidarity. For all this, there is urgent need of a true world political authority. Let me read that again. For all this, there is urgent need of a true world political authority. Another place he talks with real teeth. You understand what they're saying, a global political authority with the power to enforce itself, i.e. an empowered United Nations or an EU that goes global, that has political force. We're talking about global government here.
Gary, how far back do you feel that we could track the Vatican promoting this one worldism?
Openly, since the 1960s, through Vatican II, a lot of this began to come out. Back in 1986, I believe, Pope John Paul II held a meeting in Assisi, Italy, to which he invited over 200 religious leaders from around the world, representing all the world's major religions. What took place at that meeting was almost unbelievable. There are some of these religious leaders practicing occult rituals. We actually had video footage of it. In fact, the Vatican made a videotape on that. It was actually a Catholic organization, I think, out of New York State. And I remember looking at that. It was one of those things you have to see to believe.
Yes, I agree.
And from that time forward, interfaithism really was launched in a more public kind of way, the idea that all religions are pathways to God. Let's just all come together. And you have to ask the question, why? Why would anybody be promoting that agenda, as clear as the Bible is, about Christ and his atoning blood? Then for the Pope to make statements such as the Holy Spirit is present in all people, regardless of their faith, regardless of their religion, it told me that there was a bigger agenda at play here. And pushing the political side of this forward now since the 60s, it's become more blatant than ever under Pope Francis, who, by the way, just launched his global compact on education on October 15th.
He did.
And that is completely one world. He basically rubber-stamped the ideological agenda pushed by the global elites. My Catholic friends have to come to terms with this.
Yes.
They're going to have to make some decisions, just like Protestants have to make about some of their leaders that are endorsing this kind of thing. I realize it's a hard decision to make in some respects because all of us are guilty to some degree of just following tradition because it's how it's always been. And then to have to intentionally break with that tradition because one of our leaders is going the globalist route and not just behind the scenes but very flagrantly promoting a dangerous one-world socialist agenda. We need to remind ourselves where socialism ends up. I'm not aware of one situation of our generation where socialism has ended well. Now, I hate to use Venezuela again, but it's such a good example because at one point in time, they had the second highest standard of living in the world. A lot of people are not aware of that. It was a very wealthy country. As of last year, I heard we have friends down there who have family. They still go down there and take a big risk because once they get in, there's no guarantee they'll be able to get back out. But our friend told us that the average Venezuelan lost approximately 20 pounds of weight last year, and it's because they're literally starving. You're talking about socialism completely ruining a robust economy where almost everyone was prospering, and those who weren't were able to get some much-needed help from those who were. But now the whole country is in dire straits, except for the dictators that run it. They're
That's
doing
right.
real well.
Gary, just in the interest of time, in the spring, you and I on air spent a great deal of time talking about how the COVID pandemic has contributed to, again, the cause of the One Worlders. Well, we're many months beyond last spring now because we're heading into the end of 2020 here. So give me your observations as to where this is going.
There's a lot of money being poured into the development of the vaccines. The biggest single financial contribution to all of this is coming from Bill Gates. He's helping to fund the forward motion of 12 different vaccines, putting more money into some than others. I have a real problem with that. I'm not against vaccines per se. I realize they have their place, and some vaccines can help to prevent a lot of deaths around the world. But when I look at all the manipulation that has gone into this COVID agenda and how they're trying to use it for an ulterior purpose of pushing us toward global government and global authority. And then you look at how Gates himself has been involved in pushing some of these vaccines, and you look at the history of the Gates organization. And in fact, I just did an article on this, Jan, in our fall issue. People will be able to go to our website and look at this. And it's under the COVID vaccines and Bill Gates. And I just want to share this excerpt with you because it summarizes it. Back in 2010, when Gates committed $10 billion to the UN's World Health Organization, he said, we must make this the decade of vaccines. The World Health Organization agreed, and they've been working together since. While he has certainly made good on his promise, he actually launched his public pursuits in the area of vaccines back in 1999 when the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation donated $750 million to set up the Global Alliance of Vaccines and Immunizations, also known as GAVI. More recently, Gates has also thrown his weight behind the ID 2020 Alliance's pursuit of a mandatory digital ID for every human being. Among the most influential ID 2020 Alliance partners are Gavi and Microsoft, both Gates organizations, who together with the Rockefeller Foundation, Accenture, the United Nations, and the World Economic Forum have held the greatest sway over the progress of these efforts. And so as a research writer, Scott Kiesler, puts it, he says, so basically, Bill Gates has adopted as his personal mission the task of enrolling every single person on the planet in a global ID database, and vaccines are the vehicle through which this will be accomplished. In other words, you've got both of these efforts moving forward, funded by the same people coming together in a vaccine. And a pastor friend of mine from North Dakota called me and he said, a few weeks ago, he saw on the internet an interview that Gates had done where he said that his goal was to put a chip that can be tracked into these vaccines and together simultaneously put them into a human. And he wants this to be mandatory worldwide. Well, I said, can you get that documentation for me? He said, I'll go back and try to find it. He went back and it had been taken down. So then he wanted to be absolutely sure that he heard and saw right. So he contacted a friend of his who saw the same interview, and they said, yes, that is what Gates said. And it's no secret that Gates is, in fact, promoting both. The only question is, will it be part of the vaccine or will it come later? And I think, honestly, if Gates has his way, both would come together and they would put out a vaccine with a tracking chip in it, or if not a chip, another technology that he has also been helping to fund. Quantum dots technology, for example, together with the vaccine. So people need to understand this is about way more than simply a vaccine. It's about consolidating global control in such a way that every human being on the planet can be tracked, and they're going to try to use a vaccine to get it done. The difficult thing, and what I cannot project, Jan, is because there are more than 15 different vaccines under development right now, and all of them have different ingredients in them. Until we know what ingredients are in all these concoctions, I can't say which vaccine would be bad, which one would be good, but I can tell you this. Any vaccine sponsored by Gates, I would be very leery of, especially given his family's history in all of this. His father was on the board of directors of Planned Parenthood, and we know what that organization has done over the years. Bill himself has been supportive of the same organization and over the years has called for drastic reductions in the human population of the planet. And now we are supposed to believe that he has suddenly committed himself to saving billions of lives. That doesn't add up. It seems more like an oxymoron, quite frankly.
Gary, my understanding is the globalists really want to get the population down to about 500 million. At least that's stated on the Georgia Guidestones. How accurate the Georgia Guidestones are, we have no idea. But the globalists themselves talk about reducing the population greatly. So your point is very well taken that now the Gates Foundation really wants to save billions of lives when in fact the goal of the One Worlders is to reduce the population drastically. And I think part two of what you're saying, Gary, is will these vaccines be mandatory or voluntary? At this point, we don't know. And I think part three is, are these vaccines a part of the beast system, the Antichrist system? It's very possible. If you want to sum up with a comment on that, go ahead.
I believe whether it's mandatory or not in the United States will depend to some degree on how the election turns out. Mm-hmm. I think Biden and Harris, if they get in, they will do everything they can to make it mandatory. Biden has already said he'll shut everything down again if he has to. They're taking some very extreme measures, so they're telegraphing where it will go. I can't guarantee that Donald Trump would not make it mandatory, but if he did, it would fly against everything he's done so far. I think for people who would want to take it, it would be available, but I think at least a third of the nation would not take it for the very reasons that I've already laid out. As people are becoming aware of some of these things involving the vaccines and how questionable many of them are, we'll have to wait and see on that front. But regarding the beast system, yes, this is laying the groundwork quite rapidly, I might add, to a global system that the UN is pushing, Gates is pushing it, the Rockefeller Foundation is pushing it. All the big players that have been pushing globalization for many years have thrown their full weight behind it. That's coming through in the mass media. You look at ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, they're all on board. And they'll play the game along with the globalists. They're on the same page together. If it wasn't for Fox News as a major news outlet right now, we'd have a much harder time getting this information out.
There's some good websites. Breitbart and others are telling the truth, but they're getting fewer and fewer as well, worldnetdaily.com and all. I wanted to recommend Gary's website. Again, that's GaryKah.org. Sign up for his newsletter. You can read articles from the newsletter at GaryKah.org, and you can also look into his books, En Route to Global Occupation. And book number two is titled, remind me, Gary.
The New World Religion.
The New World Religion. Gary, I want to have you back because obviously what we're talking about is totally cutting edge. I had Gary last spring, so if you think this sounds similar, this is very current programming. It's right before our 2020 election here, and it's a call to please go out and vote because just even 5% of Christians not voting here in November could not only just swing the election, but swing the tide of our times and cause the complete destabilization of America and the world. 5% of Christians not voting, that could happen. Gary, thank you. We will stay in touch. I'll have you back here in the very near future. Again, thank you for all you do.
Thank you, Jan. Really appreciate it. God bless you.
We'll talk again. Folks, don't go away. I'm coming back in just a couple of minutes.
We love getting your feedback. Write us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Get our mail when you write to Jan Markell and Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. More in a moment. Now that the leftist agenda in America is so clear, learn more about it from a man who has made an award-winning exposé of the communist plan to take down America. We have carried the two DVD set produced by Curtis Bowers, Agenda 2, Masters of Deceit, for years. Curtis is one of our most popular radio guests. He outlines the plan to infiltrate and take over America with an intricate Marxist plan targeting your kids, our schools, our seminaries, and more. But at the same time, we encourage you to read The Answer to This Dilemma, a new book by Dr. Robert Jeffress, Praying for America, 40 Inspiring Stories and Prayers for Our Nation. Find both products in our online store, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Or call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. You can also sign up for our print magazine and find them offered in our year-end issue. Equip yourself to understand the times by tapping into our products, our website, our live online updates, and our weekly radio program. See how all the Bible predicted is coming to pass.
That is something you would expect to hear in Castro's Cuba or the old Soviet Union, maybe communist China, enemies of the state. That's not the way American politicians talk about even their most direct political opponents. But that's where we are in America, and that's why I'm trying to prepare people for when the violence comes to their town.
Our radio outreach, Understanding the Times Radio, is now in its 20th year and airs on 900 stations across the U.S. and Canada. Thank you for your financial and prayer support of Olive Tree Ministries. We could not do this without you. And in an age of fake news and false teaching, we appreciate your confidence in us. Jan continues her discussion of the serious and grave direction America has taken in 2020 with author Leo Holman. Here is part two of today's Understanding the Times Radio.
Have you been to America lately? A lot of Americans really haven't. For months, most of us have stayed close to home. We've had to. So the next time you get on a plane and visit a couple of American cities, you may be surprised, especially if you remember those cities well from before the pandemic. An awful lot has changed in a short time. Many stores and restaurants are closed. You expect that. Churches are locked on Sunday morning. That's weird. The streets seem empty except for the parks, which are full of the homeless. When you do see people, they tend to be wearing masks and they won't get close to you. It's a very strange experience. The country has changed a lot. The culture has changed a lot, and really not for the better. So the question is, how long will this last? How long do we have to endure this? When do we get our country back? When can we live like we used to live back in February? That question is too rarely asked, and in fact, asking it is actively discouraged.
And welcome back. Heading into part two of my programming here, and I'm being joined in just a moment by Leo Holman. Leo is an independent freelance journalist. He's author of the 2017 book Stealth Invasion. We covered that on air, I believe, back in 2017. And Leo says, the left's obsession with race is driving a wedge between generations and tearing at the social cohesion necessary for any nation to succeed. And I'm going to throw in, even the church is now obsessed with what's known as critical race theory. Well, we're going to try to hit a lot of topics here in the time that we have left. And one of the articles that jumped out at me that Leo has written at his website, and I often post his articles at olivetreeviews.org, was an article titled, Chaos is Coming to Mayberry. Well, let me just read a paragraph from Chaos is Coming to Mayberry. Remember, I live in Mayberry. Chaos came to my hometown and 5 miles is burned to the ground. Leo, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much, Jan. It's always an honor to be on your show.
I'm just reading a paragraph or two from Chaos is Coming to Mayberry, and even Mark Levin read this article. He was so moved by it on his radio program. You write, the majority of Americans still have no idea that they are living in the midst of a low-boil civil war. They sit back on comfy couches watching on TV or computer screens little snippets of the new normal. They see chaos enveloping large cities, Minneapolis, my hometown, Seattle, Portland, Baltimore, Chicago, New York, D.C., but don't believe it will come to their small city or suburb. They take whatever is said by their favorite media personalities, their politician of choice, at face value, and have lost all ability to engage critical thinking skills, if they ever had any to begin with. And you say they will only realize that they are being herded like sheep into a new type of society when authorities talk down to citizens and bark orders at them like a parent would scold a child after the low boil gets turned into a roaring flame. And you say the heat has in fact already been turned up from low to medium as attacks on random cops and Trump supporters have resulted in death and severe injury to dozens in the above-mentioned cities. So, Leo, what do you mean in your title, Chaos is Coming to Mayberry?
Well, Jan,
this has really been the theme of late, the overriding theme in all of my articles for the last 8 or 9 months, is to try to prepare people to look and be aware, be alert, as the Bible teaches us to be, and on our guard. And don't assume that what you see on the news is just going to be in those far-left cities on the mm-hmm. East Coast and the West Coast, Portland, Seattle, New York,
Chicago,
LA.
Minneapolis.
Well, there's a few in the middle as well, mm-hmm. right? Atlanta, we had an incident in here in Atlanta near myself where I am living, and it can be frightening. It's less frightening, I think, when you're watching the news and it's just in one of these big cities. People don't connect the dots. They see each individual incident as an outlier, isolated incident. That's the way the media tends to report things. But I'm trying to prepare Christian people to be expecting it. Don't just think it's not going to come to your town. Expect it to come to your town. We have seen it come to Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Yes, that's correct.
Smaller and smaller cities seem to be getting enveloped in this violence, and it is violence, even though the media tells us these protests have been mostly peaceful. We had Michelle Obama go on national TV just recently and say that these protests have been overwhelmingly peaceful. We're not supposed to believe what we see with our own eyes. I'm trying to take the opposite tack and let people know that, A, they're not peaceful, B, expect them to come to, if not your city, at least someplace very close to your city, so you can be prepared both physically and spiritually for these attacks and not be surprised and caught off guard. I cannot believe every week I'm seeing another outrageous attack that in many cases are not even reported by the media. I have a whole list of them in my last couple of articles. Just take, for instance, Asheville, North Carolina. We saw Antifa rioters carrying a coffin full of cow manure to the local police department on September 23rd, and when a local reporter tried to videotape the incident, they slammed him into a parking meter, causing a traumatic brain injury. He's still in the hospital. When that happened, the Antifa radicals got on Twitter and celebrated the entire attack. It's really quite breathless.
Folks, you can access Leo's articles at leohoman.com. Leohoman.com, Leo's freelance writer. He one time was a regular writer on WND.com, but he's all over the place now with his articles, and I try to post them as often as I can. But I'm going to another article you've written, Leo, and it is about the biggest takeaway you had. And that would have been in the first presidential debate, Leo Homan, was the fact that Vice President Biden, now running for president of the United States, actually only saw Antifa as just an idea. It's just a theory. So it's not really an organization, though by their own admission, they're not only an organization, they're very well organized. And you say this, the biggest takeaway from this debate, Biden's cavalier reaction to the issue of Antifa, you go on to say, even if Antifa could be reduced to an idea, Mr. Biden couldn't bring himself to declare it a bad idea. Is it any wonder that when Mr. Trump asked him point blank whether he could name even one law enforcement organization that has endorsed him, Joe Biden fell silent? And then you say, so if Biden is the Democrat Party and he approves of Antifa, the takeaway should be obvious for anyone paying attention. Democrats are Antifa and Antifa are Democrats. Whether they have any formal ties, they are two organizations working toward a singular goal. This is huge, as it confirms our worst nightmare should Biden become our next president. If elected, Mr. Biden will not rein in Antifa, and in fact will unleash them on his political opponents. I'm going to stop there, Leo, but you go ahead and comment.
The very next part of that sentence where you stopped was that he would unleash them similar to the way Hitler unleashed his brown shirts on the Jewish population in Germany. And what happened before he unleashed the brown shirts, they were derided, they were mocked, they were vilified in the German media. We see the same thing happening against the deplorables in America now.
The Christians.
Mostly Christian people, exactly, who vote for Trump. We've seen some horrific things by pretty prominent people. Mr. Dick Costolo, who's the former CEO of Twitter, recently tweeted that certain capitalists in this country should be lined up and shot during the revolution, the American Revolution. He said that he would be the first one to videotape it and provide some commentary as soon as that happens. It's unbelievable. These are not just basement dwellers who are putting this stuff out there. We've had very prominent people, people in positions of authority, say just outrageous, hateful things against Christians and Trump supporters. Nancy Pelosi called them enemies of the
Thank
state.
You for bringing that out. She actually did say that.
Yes, that is something you would expect to hear in Castro's Cuba or the old Soviet Union, maybe communist China. Enemies of the state? That's not the way American politicians talk about even their most direct political opponents. But that's where we are in America, and that's why I'm trying to prepare people for when the violence comes to their town.
You say in this article about Antifa and the fact that former Vice President Biden does not want to really acknowledge their existence, but you say it will be open season on Christian conservatives. They will be assaulted in the streets, coming out of their churches, in their homes, their businesses and property will be fair game for attack under a Biden-Harris regime whose attorney general will simply turn a blind eye while the media continues to do what the media always does, ignore that Antifa even exists. And then you say, Leo, and I'm going to wind this down here, how do we know this? Because the beginning of this assault is already underway. The only difference is that under Trump and Attorney General Bill Barr, the federal government is encouraging and assisting state and local police in the investigation and prosecution of these attacks. Earlier this week, President Trump declared Antifa a domestic terrorist organization. No matter how staunchly they will try to deny it, Biden's bowing to Antifa in the first debate provides the clearest evidence yet that the Progressive Party has completed its transition into America's most powerful Communist Party. By the way, the Communist Party did endorse Mr. Biden, I believe. Biden has an opportunity to denounce Antifa, or at least draw a clear line of distinction between it and his party. To be fair, in the weeks that remain, he may come out and realize he's going to have to denounce them. Do you think that's possible?
I would be very surprised, Jan, if that happens. Mr. Biden had an opportunity handed to him on a silver platter during that debate. All he needed to say was, Antifa is a violent group of people. We don't really understand its organizational structure. We're not sure who's in charge of it and who these orders are coming down from, but we denounce the violence. He refused to do it. He clearly just flat out refused to do it, said that it was just an idea. And if something is just an idea, it doesn't really exist. It's just something that's in people's heads. So it doesn't really play out where the rubber meets the road on the street. All the violence we've been seeing must not have anything to do with Antifa. And then you see the media, right on cue, doing their job of offering cover to Biden. Did they question him further on that? Did they ask him to denounce Antifa the way they asked President Trump for days to denounce the Proud Boys and the so-called white supremacist organizations, which the Proud Boys actually came back and said, we're not white supremacists, and a lot of their leadership structure is Hispanic and black. But they always hold President Trump's feet to the fire about this white supremacy thing, which he has denounced many, many times. But it's never enough, because they want to keep him, what, on the defensive, all the while letting Biden float freely in his refusal to denounce Antifa or even get into a serious discussion of it.
Leo, in the first part of this hour, I did talk with my guest about the rush to globalism, and you write a lot about globalism, the coming one-world system and all. You write about the march to globalism. I've got some articles in front of me here. You are very informative, I think, when it comes to helping your readers understand this global one-world agenda. Kind of baffles me as to why they want utter violence and chaos other than creates a crisis climate. Now, crisis is needed for a global agenda, but beyond that, why are they encouraging this?
Well, I think they want to remove the Christian element, Jan, the conservative, Bible-believing Christian element, what's left of it, from Western society. We've seen prominent individuals, as we've discussed, issue these scary edicts on Facebook, on Twitter. Sean King, he is a Black Lives Matter leader, recently got on Twitter and said that Black Lives Matter people should attack churches and especially statues of Jesus. Well, what have we seen in the months following? We've seen a lot of attacks on churches and statues of Jesus. We've seen the Antifa folks in Portland burning Bibles,
yes,
publicly burning Bibles. it's obvious if we're paying attention who the ultimate target is here. It's not just random violence. The targets are very clear. We've got the church and Christianity. We've got the business community, because they're also against capitalism. These power elites that I've been trying to inform people about, a lot of them go back to the United Nations and the World Economic Forum.
That's right.
The International Monetary Fund, the British Royal Family, the Vatican. Every single one of them have issued statements recently on the need to make complete good use of this COVID-19 crisis and use it to launch what they call the Great Reset, mm-hmm. or the new economy, or the new socioeconomic order, the Green New Deal. They have different names for it, but it's all the same. It's a new world order, and they're going after these targets, the church, the business community, and our history. That's why you see so many of the statues and monuments being desecrated and destroyed, because before you can take over a society, a nation, you need to destroy its history and its sense of being.
One of the tools being used, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I want to spend a minute or two on that, and that's this critical race theory. And if I could sum that up in a sentence, it's basically America was birthed in racism. You write in one of your articles how your child is being groomed to be the next Antifa Black Lives Matter street rioter. The left's obsession with race is driving a wedge between generations and tearing at the social cohesion necessary for any nation to succeed. And you say President Trump's executive order banning critical race theory from federal agencies is a great first step in stopping the Marxist infiltration of government. But if he wants to make a real and lasting difference, the president will turn his focus to the nation's public schools. Here he will find a cesspool of leftist propaganda being drummed into the heads of students and their teachers. Then you say, this is where the foundational views of America's next generation of leaders are being formed. And right now, the most fashionable thing on the menu is critical race theory, in the church too, by the way. It's being served up in mega doses, and any teacher who complains faces the threat of discipline or termination. Critical race theory can be best summed up as the anti-American hatred dressed up in the garb of scientific scholarship. Let me drop down and read a closing paragraph or two, Leo. You write, critical race theory, it's been a staple of social studies courses for at least a decade in K-12, and longer than that in universities. I'm going to close here, but I want your comment, Leo. Proponents of critical race theory see America as an illegitimate nation guilty of war crimes, first against Native Americans, then against African American slaves. As you say, it's being thrown down the throats of anybody in education, grade school, high school, higher education, also in our churches. It's taken over the pulpits. Instead of a salvation message today, it's critical race theory. That is the point of your article. I am concluding how your child is being groomed to be the next Antifa BLM street rioter.
And yeah, this is a topic that's close to my heart, and I think close to a lot of people's hearts, because they have children and grandchildren in these schools, which have really been turned into nothing but indoctrination centers. I've got a video in that article you were reading from that will just stun most people to watch. It's Frost Lake, I believe, elementary school in Minnesota, where you've got little elementary school kids, 6, 7 years old, marching around the school grounds with signs saying, no justice, no peace. And you can hear the teacher in the background screaming, I can't hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Say it louder. These are children at an elementary school that is a failing school. The test scores are lower than 98% of the other elementary schools in the state of Minnesota. And they're using valuable teachers' time to train these kids to be Black Lives Matter street rioters, just as the title of my article said. And this has been going on, Jan, for so long in the schools. It seems like it's now leaking into the churches and the corporations and the law enforcement. But it's been in the schools for 15, 20 years now, and we're just now discovering it. We're so far behind the eight ball. The Communist Party, at the time based in the Soviet Union, back in the 1930s, identified race as the soft spot of America. This was the place they targeted because they knew it was our weak point, racial relations.
Right. You can find these articles at Leo's website, leoholman.com. You can sign up there, and then you'll get sent his articles once a week at least. You're absolutely right, Leo, but what has broken my heart is what I'm hearing from churches all across America, that this is the new mantra in the pulpit. Not so much, you must be born again, but critical race theory and all the implications that you're talking about now, that is, I'm talking about evangelical. You expect mainline Protestants to head down this path. But when I hear about your First Baptist Church and you fill in the blank city talking about this, it's heartbreaking. Or Southern Baptist Convention is big on critical race theory.
They embraced it at their convention in 2019. Shocker. This was, until recently, one of the most conservative mainline denominations, the Southern Baptist Convention. And so even if they are bowing to critical race theory, that tells us how serious this problem is throughout our churches. It's only going to get worse unless we start to stand up against it.
Let's conclude here. I want you to summarize one more article of yours, and we're down to about 5 minutes here. And that is the three biggest lies about COVID-19 have been exposed, and here's why the globalist power brokers can't let it die. Give me those three bullet points. Take your time. We've got about 5 minutes.
My latest article, The Three Biggest Lies About COVID-19 Exposed, but why we can expect the global elites, the power elites, to continue to beat this drum and beat these lies over the heads of Americans. Number one is COVID-19 carries a very high 3.4% death rate compared to the flu death rate of 0.1%. Now, this was all over the media back in February, March, April, May. It started to fall off the radar in June, July, and August, but they just didn't talk about how low the new death rate was. Well, it came out in the first week of October that the death rate for COVID is actually 0.13%, almost exactly the same rate as the flu, the seasonal flu. But you won't hear the media talk about that. Number two, biggest lie, COVID is spread by asymptomatic super spreaders. This scares the living daylights out of people every time they hear it because it suggests that every person that you come in contact with, no matter how healthy and normal they look, is a potential super spreader and you're going to catch the virus from them. This is completely false. Asymptomatic carriers have a very low viral load of the virus in their system, which makes it virtually impossible for them to pass it on to someone else. But even in the rare cases that they might be able to pass it on, it's highly unlikely if they don't have symptoms. Why? Because they're not coughing, sneezing, and wheezing.
Right.
That's how this virus is spread. Droplets through the air from people with symptoms, coughing and sneezing. But yet, you continue to hear it every night, even on Fox News, about the asymptomatic carriers. They're the big super spreaders. You have to be aware of them. Be very, very afraid. That brings us to the third biggest lie. COVID is untreatable. Now, that truly is scary, Jan, if a disease is untreatable, right? This lie provided the pretext for Bill Gates and Big Pharma to rush to market their unsafe and unproven vaccine, which we continue to hear being promoted throughout even the Trump administration. But this no-treatment thing has been exposed over and over, Jan, as a lie, and it was most recently exposed when President Trump walked out of Walter Reed Hospital, got on that helicopter, and flew to the White House 3 days after being admitted.
Right.
Why? Because he had received such effective treatment. He received a cocktail of supplements along with remdesivir, and of course we know vitamin D, melatonin, and hydroxychloroquine are also great treatments for
them. So why won't the globalist power brokers let this die, these issues you've pointed out?
Two big reasons. First is the vaccine, which we've already mentioned. There's tens of millions of dollars to be made in profits. Secondly, the Great Reset, which we've already discussed, is on the table and being ready to be launched. And they know they cannot launch it if Americans, the biggest obstacle, continue to live in what are considered normal times. Because in normal times, what? We're happy. We're prosperous. We are not going to lay our civil liberties on the table and sacrifice them because of some crisis that has been thrown at us in the media. But if we have COVID-19 out there and the media continues to beat that drum, everybody stays in a panic mode, in a fear mode, and they're looking to their leaders to fix the problem. And that's when the elite globalists come in with this great reset which, as we know, is a much more authoritarian type system than what we're used to here in America.
Folks, I encourage you to tap into the writings of Leo. Again, sign up at his website, leohoman.com, leohoman.com. Leo, I want to thank you for joining me today. I need to go out of the program here, but I want to just go out saying this, because we have talked heavily about global government this hour, and it's not conspiracy talk. Frankly, it's biblical. It's on the horizon. The players are, I think, gathering, and they're scheming, and they're wheeling, and they're dealing, and they have wanted a return to Babel, and someday, sooner than most think, they will get their wish for, well, it will be 7 ignominious years known as the tribulation. Then Jesus returns and sets up perfect global government. I say bring it on. I want to thank you for listening, folks, and we will talk to you again next week.
Jesus Redeemer, mighty to save. You might want to consider watching our program on our website under Complete Archives, on our YouTube channel, or on his channel, Christian Television. You encourage us when you write us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We get our mail when you write to Jan Markell and Olive Tree Ministries, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. And we again remind you that God is in control. Nothing catches him by surprise. You are engraved in the palms of his hands, and everything is falling into place.